often do. Madam Director, do you have any public comments for items not on the agenda?
I do not see any members of the public present.
If there are, okay, no public comments, then we're going to move on to item 4, approval of the minutes of the CAC's regular meeting on November 1, 2022. Has everybody had a chance to look through the minutes? And if so, do we have a motion to approve or do we have proposed changes? Patrick, I'll forward it to you. Do I have a motion? Was that Molly?
Yes.
Do I have a second to approve?
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Hearing none, that passes. Patrick, I just sent you the email with the agenda, so hopefully you got that. And while Patrick's trying to looking for that, let's go on into the administrative reports. And I believe that this is Director Bernstein.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I can start with my executive director's report. I think normally we start with the CAC member reports. Does anybody have anything, any reports they would like to share?
Just if you could just raise your hand or unmute yourself. Candy, go ahead and go.
Thank you. Just a couple quick updates. So in Davis was last month, so the city council voted to keep the open street on G Street in downtown between 2nd and 3rd permanent, and also move ahead with the now that also opens the door to making that that's permanent. It can be it can be set up to be more of a permanent open street with things like better ADA access and permanent outdoor seating and stuff like that. So that should become a nicer area. Just a couple of blocks from Line 42 up on 6th Street there. So it should be a nice transit accessible destination for people to enjoy. Also, Unitrans, I believe it was back in December, so since our last meeting, now they're accepting the Zip Pass for payments, just like Yolo Bus and Zach RT. So again, that's good news, making it easier to pay at a ride transit, both easy to get to Davis, and once you're within Davis, easy to get around on Unitrans as well. And then finally, I have been on the Unitrans Advisory Committee, but now I've switched over to the Bicycling Transportation Street Safety Commission here. And our next meeting is a week from Thursday, I believe that's February 9th at 5:30. And then I believe it's in March we're going to an in-person meeting, so that should be exciting.
Thank you. Big things happening over there in Davis. Are there other updates? Seeing none, then let's move on to Executive Director's Report.
Great. Thanks, Madam Chair. A couple things I'll note. Just today, we got a signed term sheet from the Federal Highway Administration for our YAATI project. That's our YOLO Active Transportation Corridors project that Brian, who's here, is leading. That project, we've been sort of just fuddling our thumbs, waiting for FHWA to approve the final paperwork. There's still, you know, Caltrans needs to sign it. There's a few more hoops that we need to jump through, but we're really looking forward to getting that project started. We have selected a consultant team led by Baron Peers, and the Center for Regional Change at UC Davis is also a part of that. So we're ready to get going, and very excited that we finally have clearance. So you'll be hearing more about that project moving forward in the coming months. As well, we're deep in doing service planning for our new Woodland Microtransit service, and we currently have a couple of surveys on the street. One is a general Woodland Transit survey, and then another one that is, Woodland Travel Survey, and then a second survey that is specific to current riders of our 211 and 212, our local services in Woodland, to get their input. And we're also going through a branding exercise to rebrand all of our microtransit services. Currently, the urban rural connections for your ride, and so we're looking at a brand that can a bit more modern kind of, and one that can kind of encompass more urban as well as rural type services. And so that's happening now, and we're planning to bring a service then for the Woodland Service, as well as kind of branding and other information to our board in March. And then the last thing I'll note is that it is Transit Equity Day. Rosa Parks' birthday is coming up on February 4th, and we're going to be offering free rides throughout the throughout our service on that day. So with that, I'll leave it at that. And I know we're going to be talking about both the Route 42 and the Interstate 80 project are on the agenda, so I won't share any updates on those because you're going to get more on that in the meeting ahead.
Great. Can you give us a little bit of a look at the long-range calendar, just to kind of an update on that?
Sure. I believe that is in your packet. Let me just scroll to it. Apologies. So, so coming up, as I mentioned, in March, thank you, Heather. Oh, Heather said I can add her as a panelist. Okay, maybe her computer is working again. Okay, we'll see if that works. I know Heather does have the slide deck. Hopefully it starts working and she can share the slide deck.
Oh, I see hope because I see her name.
Yes, that's promising. So you were asking about the long-range calendar. So a couple items to just highlight. In March, as I mentioned, we'll be talking about our Woodland Microtransit Service Plan and potentially our fixed route service changes. There, Heather! Hooray! as well, we'll be kind of kicking off our strategic planning workshop. We're looking at developing a 10-year strategic plan this year. Patrick, your kid is so cute. Hi! And we're also going to be working on our zero emission bus rollout plan. So those are all kind of things that are kind of queued up for the spring. Yeah, as mentioned, we're excited to be kicking off YOLO Active Transportation Corridors project finally. And then we'll be getting into budget season in May. Kind of May, we'll be bringing to you our draft budget that's going to be going to the board for approval in June. So there's just a quick look ahead, but there's lots more for the year ahead if you take a look at the long-range calendar on page 9 of your packet.
Yep, for those who have looking forward, it's item 5. Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate it. That takes us into CAC meeting dates for 2023. And is someone?
Yeah, Heather, did you want to take the item or shall I?
Oh, I am trying to share my screen now. 1 minute. Okay, can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Okay.
So except for Tuesday, June 21st, we look like they're the first week of the month. Is that correct?
Correct.
And I think the thinking on the reason that June 1 is different is because the first Tuesday in July is 4th of July.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Gonna open it up for questions from the first I should ask, is there any public comment on this item?
I see Steve has his hand raised.
Steve is a committee member.
Public comment at this time.
Okay. With that, Steve, you got your hand raised.
No. I'm puzzled about the Zoom meeting as Andy mentioned earlier. One of the city meetings he's going to is going to go in person next month. My stint on the City of Davis Planning Commission got extended to June because of the district elections, and we're also going in March starting to meet. And another county agency I'm a part of, the In-Home Support Service Advisory Committee, is also going live in March. So state law is changing, I believe, and I don't know if your agency can continue to meet in Zoom or not. So that's my basic question.
Yeah.
So if I could tee up, and then I'm going to call on the director. Director Bernstein and I had a conversation about this. And the law, the state law is changing, but as an advisory committee, the rules are slightly different as I understand it. This would only really have us adopt the calendar. And if we want to have a discussion about how we'd like to hold in those meetings, we can agendize that for the next meeting. And with that, I'm going to turn it over for anything that I missed to the director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's right. My understanding about when I've spoken to our council about it, and our council works for the county, they've told us that our advisory committees can continue to meet remotely at their discretion. But, you know, again, that and that even with the change in state law that's coming up next month, or the deadline that's coming up next month. So that said, that's our understanding now. I understand that seems like different jurisdictions have different ideas about that. But, you know, certainly if the committee wants to meet in person, we're happy to do the meetings in person. But I think that is something that we could discuss it now. I don't know that the committee actually needs to take an action. I think we can make that determination, you know, in consultation with council and then kind of make a decision with the chair. I don't know that we actually need the committee to take action on whether or not it's a Zoom or in-person meeting. So, yeah.
And I think for right now, if we can just adopt the calendar and, you know, this is a burning desire to take it up tonight, we can actually see how the landscape goes at the next meeting. But Olin, you have your hand up, so.
Yes, just an FYI, I have a conflict on September 5th. I won't be able to attend that meeting, and that's okay. I'm not upset about that necessarily, but I would like to attend if possible, if there's any flexibility in the scheduling.
Thanks, Olin. Other comments from other members? Andy.
Thank you. Just regarding the topic of in-person meetings, and I agree that's something we definitely don't need to decide tonight. But just out of curiosity, I know that the board has been I believe they've had some in-person meetings, but haven't been able to attend them. So I'm curious just how those have been so far.
They have had, I believe, just one in-person meeting, which was in December, and then the January meeting was intended to be in person, but because it was right in the middle of the flooding situation, and so in consultation with the Office of Emergency Services, they recommended that we either reschedule the meeting or make it a remote meeting, and so we needed a remote meeting. But it was nice. Everybody seemed to enjoy seeing each other in December, and I think everybody's looking forward to seeing each other again in February. I'll put it that way.
Olin.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious about the attorney's comments to YCTV about meeting in public. I serve on two other county committees, and in both cases, different attorneys have different county counsel. Attorneys have said that unless there's unusual circumstances, that in person is required. Once the governor's emergency proclamation is not renewed, and at this point anyway, everyone seems to expect the governor not to renew unless things change.
Well, I appreciate that. I think we will bring that item back on at the March meeting, and we'll see if we have more solid information at that time. Are there any other folks who have schedule conflicts besides Olin with the calendar right now? Seeing none. Director Bernstein and members of the CAC, is there any ability or appetite to change the September 5th meeting to accommodate Olin's schedule?
I'm open to going to the 12th or some other Tuesday.
And I have a conflict as well on the 12th, Steve.
Okay.
Both the 5th and the 12th would be out for me, but August is open.
We would need to move the meeting earlier, not later, in order to kind of keep with our intention of having this meeting happen before the board meeting so that we can inform items that are on the board agenda. So it would have to move to later at the last week in August.
And I will have schedule conflicts on both sides of that because I have one in August and another for Planning Commission in the third week of September. So I don't think I could do that.
Can we do a different day of the week, Monday, Wednesday, or Thursday?
If it's the committee's desire to accommodate a different meeting, we can do a survey and bring it back. I might suggest that the committee could adopt the other meeting dates and then direct staff to do a doodle poll or something for the September meeting.
I appreciate that. I think that's wise. Olin, you have a comment?
So moved.
Second.
Any additional discussion? So we're clear, we're proposing to adopt the CAC meeting dates of March 7th, May 1st, June 27th, and November 7th. And we will do a survey to look at some alternate dates that will work for the committee for the meeting of September 5th. Is that what I understand we're voting on?
Yep.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? We got a schedule. Congratulations, everybody. Autumn, can you add to the March calendar the remote meeting discussion?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Pardon?
I'll just make one note, which is that if there is a determination that we do need to meet in person, we may have to kind of make that decision unilaterally without the committee's input. If that's the determination that the law is we can no longer meet via Zoom, then we would do that. But otherwise, we'll plan on just having that discussion with the committee.
Works for me. Okay, moving on to item 7.
Before we leave that, if the chair and the executive director are going to have that discussion about whether or not we go to Zoom meetings. Could we have a little discussion then about people's preferences for Zoom or not to Zoom?
So what we've just done is put the discussion onto the calendar for March so that the whole committee can discuss it. What the director is saying, that is if we're preempted by state law that we have to meet in person and that would take effect in March, so that staff will move forward with an in-person. Otherwise, we're meeting on Zoom and we're having a discussion about how to meet.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. That takes care of my concern.
Thank you. Moving on to number 7. Ooh, exciting. Appointing a chair and vice chair for 2023. Consistent with the decision to align the leadership with the calendar year. So as you know, we moved the selection of chair so that our dates would coincide with the dates of the board. And it's that time now. So here we are.
Lisa Baker as chair.
This is all you guys. If you have a second or not a second.
I'll just note too that we do suggest appointing a vice chair as well.
Right.
So of course that's at the committee's discretion.
All right.
I have a question. Go ahead, Olin.
I move then that Lisa Baker is chair and Steve Streeter is vice chair.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Nobody needs to raise their hand for this.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion for Lisa Baker to continue as chair and a motion for Steve Streeter to continue as vice chair. We have a second. Shall we have a vote? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Seeing none, you guys are stuck with us for another year.
Just to follow up, Lisa, have you really been chair for several years? I don't know.
I don't know if I've been for several years. No.
Maybe two years?
I came in part of 1 year, and then I was chair for the full year last year, and I've been elected again. So not several years. Just been on the board for quite a while.
Just clarifying.
No, no. It's just so tedious to have me as chair. It seems like forever.
And since you've been such a good attendee, I've not had to serve as vice chair, so.
Oh, I'm going to fix that. Okay.
I apologize for the ambiguity in the staff report. I couldn't remember and couldn't find any record of when you were appointed chair, Madam Chair.
It's all good. I do want to say congratulations to Stephen. He's been a good vice chair. Number 8, we're going to get an update on our favorite route, 42A and 42B, and talk about service changes, options for other improvements, and address concerns that have been expressed by riders, especially in South Davis. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Chair Baker. This is Eric Wright's staff, as discussed. So as this committee knows, on September 19th, 2022, the district implemented the first round of service changes on the Route 42. These changes included taking the service to 45-minute headways throughout the day and 30-minute headways during the commute in the morning. It also changed the route, making it more streamlined in the city of Davis and downtown Sacramento. The big part of these service changes were to make the route operate in a more streamlined, more efficient way, and to provide a better, more efficient service throughout the route. Also of note is that on January 15th of 2023, we also added 9 additional trips to the Route 42. Most of the discussion that we're going to have tonight is going to be about the most recent, or about the service changes from September. So just some ridership impacts. We've seen a 29% increase in overall ridership in the 3 months compared to a year before. The thing I would also comment about is that the ridership has dropped a little bit in the past month, but we've seen the fact that December's ridership seemed to be very connected to the additional days that the University of California, Davis students were on break. So we're pretty confident that there's a correlation between those two. Thank you, Heather, for putting up this map. The map is to show the service that was removed from the city of Davis. In particular, the red line shows where we are. We're no longer providing service on F Street, Covell, and in South Davis. And we have a variety of feedback that we've received from YOLO bus riders in a vast amount of different ways. We've received phone calls. We've received emails. We've received messages through LinkedIn and a variety of other social media to, you know, kind of compile what the community think of the new service. A good amount of the feedback we received was very positive. A large amount of the community enjoys the increased frequency and the speed of the route, and there is an understanding from people who understand that. There are concerns about the route, too, in particular the removal of bus stops and the routes from Covell and from South Davis, as was discussed. Moving forward, the plan had always been to implement this new service and then review it, see what the public thought, see how the service operated, and think about how services could continue to be improved. And there's a number of different potential service improvements. You know, there's an idea of increased frequency a little bit beyond the peak. There's discussions about how we can put service into South Davis and facilitate mobility in that area. I do want to comment with the South Data Service that district staff has been really reviewing how much of South Davis now actually has a closer service than they did before, with access over the bike bridges from South Davis to Fifth Street. And I think the South Davis closest to El Macero is the one portion that has the least amount of service. So we're here today just to kind of have a discussion and talk with the CAC about thoughts and comments and possible proposals for improving service. And Chair, I think I saw a hand get raised.
Yep, I'm just waiting for you to finish. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about any in-depth on options, but if you're ready to take comment, I think we'll take comment from CAC, then we'll check for public comment, and then we'll come back to staff. And so in order in which I see them, it's Molly first, Steve, you're up second, Olin, you're number three, Andy, you're number four. Molly, take it away.
Sure. So my question is about the service, the ridership improvements. And I just wanted to know, when did the fares, what date did fare service return? So when did that be free?
November 1st.
November. Okay, so December wasn't also free.
No, December wasn't also free.
Right, okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, the interesting thing is we still had high increase in ridership in November. It did drop off a little bit from when we were offering free rides, but overall stayed fairly well high on a weekday average and weekend average. Where we really saw the drop-off. So this year, the UC Davis campus was closed starting December 9th. Last year, it didn't close, I think, until the 17th, if I remember correctly. And that's just the way the schedule panned out on the calendar. So I think that's a major component of the ridership that happened in December.
Sure, sure. So, and it would be interesting to know more about sort of fare-paying customers and students who may not be, you know, to understand more about who may have stopped service, stopped riding after fares increased. I don't know. I'm just curious about that. If that's something that you have any information on, you can discuss in a future meeting.
Molly, does that complete your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Steve?
Okay, I have three things. One, there's a comment under ridership impact of 80,000, but it looks like from the data that's right nearby that it maybe is intended to say 86,000 rides in 3 months for October,
December 2022. That is correct. So that does look like a typo.
Okay. The other comment, there was one of the 42A and B people commenting on Cal Boulevard. People with disabilities can get reserved yellow bus special. I don't understand why that's even there, but maybe they were unaware that that was an option. And then my other question is how does the yellow bus schedule coordinate with Unitrans, particularly the A, P, and Q buses, that could help people get from Cobell Boulevard and South Davis to the 42A and B stops closest to them?
Good point.
The interlining is interesting, I think, on some of the routes because it's determinant on which direction the passenger is going. But we staff can go ahead and take a look at both of them. I know, for example, with the A line, which does go loop through South Davis, that the connection is kind of tight to – it's either tight or long, depending on how well you think you can walk from the bus stop to the other bus stop. But that is – only for catching the route 42B towards towards Sacramento. That was the one I was looking at the time.
Andy,
go ahead.
I was just going to respond to Steve's comment on Unitrans. I'm going to have to hold my other comments till later, of course. But just to respond to that, I do have some experience taking the Unitrans P and Q lines. I live up along Coville to catch the 42. And I'd say with that, in terms of the, just because one, because they don't operate on the same frequencies, like for, like once every 30, I mean, before the recent changes, like every 30 minutes to an hour, every like 30 minutes, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour on the 42, then Unitrans is like every 30 minutes to an hour mostly. So it's kind of hit or miss, like sometimes you can definitely hit it really well at that Mesa second stop, but there are other times where it definitely does not align. So I'd say personally, like my preferred option, if I can, is to bike to the 42 as opposed to using Unitrans. That's just my personal experience with it.
Thank you. Andy. You explained that very well compared to how I did. I appreciate that.
Steve, do you have, was that all three, or do you still have?
That covers my comments. Thank you.
That covers your comments. Thank you very much. That makes it Owen's turn.
Sure. Eric, you know, in commenting about the ridership in 2021 to 2022, I'm not sure that the increase in ridership will carry through next year. In 2021, we were still in the, you know, in the midst of COVID, much more so than we are now. So it'll be interesting next year. So I'll just leave that with you. I want you to know, Autumn, that I appreciate your bringing this back on the agenda. I've expressed a lot of concerns about the loss of service to South Davis, and you know, you suggested that getting over the Dave Pell's Pike bridge and catching it there is a good alternative, and I think probably it is, although I haven't tested it. I think I said that I would, and I haven't done that yet. But I'll some point when things quiet down a little bit, I will do that. I just really think the loss of direct service to South Davis is unfortunate, but I also recognize the need for streamlining. It is important. I had a flight into Sacramento Metro several years ago, and I think I spent about an hour and a half getting from the airport to the destination in South Davis, and then from there walked home. But I'm not counting the walk in that. I think it was an hour and a half by the time we sat at County Fair, and then went on to my final destination, which was the last stop in South Davis. It was an hour and a half, and that's just, you know, a non-starter for most people. And so at any rate, I think we need to keep looking at it, and maybe there can be developed some kind of coordination with Unitrans to make it so that Andy can get to Second and Mace when it's raining hard and storming and not get wet, or not get more wet than he would on his bike. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Andy.
Thank you. These are all great comments. Thanks, everyone. Just a couple of things here. So adding on the South Davis issue, I think a key issue both I've been seeing here and just in the comments as well is that Mace overcrossing that makes it some even relative to some other parts of South Davis, might be near to the Dave Pell's overpass or the full line overpass, where there's good biking and walking infrastructure, and might actually be seeing better transit access, better access to the 42 than they did before the change. It's that southeastern part of Davis where the route used to go has been hurt in some, that has been arguably hurt because they have to deal with the Mace overpass, quite unsafe to get across. And it's definitely unfortunate, and I think the unfortunate thing is that I know that Davis is looking at doing a big project on Mace, and the Davis members on the YCTD board when they were both on city council definitely have voted to move that project forward that mainly is focused on adding traffic lanes. So I wonder if there's opportunity like to work with them to incorporate, to broaden that project more so that project might extending the scope of that to the overpass and looking at actually and looking at like putting in maybe extending the protected bike lanes that are on Mace over that overpass or just adding some form of better bike and pedestrian infrastructure so that's a better experience for folks getting to the Mace and second stop and of course improving the infrastructure at the stop as well. So has there been efforts on YCTD then to potentially coordinate on that?
Andy, are you referring to the Mace and Towel project?
Yeah, the one like the Towel right now, the Towel South.
Yeah.
That it's focused on.
My understanding is that project is kind of that they're at a point where they've sort of finalized their approach that they're doing for that. You know, my understanding when we were when the DIS project was a live option, you know, when we were talking with the city and the project and the DIS developer about improvements to Mace, the overcrossing, as well as the portion of Mace north of the overcrossing. The developer, in my understanding, was planning to pay for a process to design some improvements. And, you know, with that not moving forward, I don't know whether the city has a plan B for that. You probably know better than I do. But that's kind of the last conversations that we were a part of. But before the referendum on
this
project.
Thanks. I'll definitely look into that and definitely keep that conversation, try to do my best to keep that conversation going at the city level. And also just one other thing I wanted to bring up, again, I don't think has been brought up yet, is and this goes back to him in the general rerouting of the bus in downtown Sacramento in September, as I recall that part of the idea behind that was to make the service more reliable because there are a lot of public events on Capitol Mall. The idea of moving it to L Street was to make it so you knew where the bus was going to be. But in my experience, I've gone to a couple of Kings games this year and the team's playing well, so it's been a lot of fun. And now that the bus runs later, that's even more convenient for people to take it to Kings games or other downtown kind of events. But unfortunately, because the buses aren't able to get through on L Street after the game, when that would be potentially a prime opportunity to really make it easy to take transit to games. The bus could stop right in front of the arena, especially if people can't drive on the street and you just have transit there. So I'm curious if there's opportunity, if there have been any conversations with the city of Sacramento to potentially make it so the bus can reliably stay on L Street even during games.
It's been hit and miss, Andy. We've ran into We've asked for that, and in the past we've been granted it, but we found that different police officers will let you through the police barricade and different officers will not, and we're trying to still figure out a way to make sure that always happens, and that's why we're continuing to reroute when those go on, because we've not been able to get confirmation from the police department, yes, we'll allow this to happen all the time.
Okay, that's a good thing. I think that's mainly a SAC PD issue.
Yes. And honestly, we're working on getting a new contact because we have been having a number of fun issues where the reroutes that were talked about by SAC PD and the city of SAC have not matched up with what happens when we get there. And we know that happens every now and then, but it seems to be happening quite frequently right now, and that seems to have a lot to do with how the people on the ground perceive what should happen compared to what was planned.
Okay, I see.
So, I'm trying to be nice about that as much as I can. It's been kind of frustrating for both staff and for our customers because we've been doing a number of reroutes. Another fun part's been 9th and K in particular. You know, people blocking that and the police officers just going ahead and waving us to go past the intersection because it's blocked. So, we're trying to fix that as we speak.
Yeah, I've had some experiences having to run to a different stop. I think everyone's been at that 9th and K stop and someone parked in the lane and the bus can't get through. So then I find myself like running over Fifth Street or even like Front Street. So
yes, and we've been having a large amount of discussions, both internally, and we'll start having them. They probably need to happen at a higher level. So we'll probably be escalating that above the people we've been working with.
Thanks for the efforts on that.
You're welcome.
Those your comments, Andy?
Yep. Yeah, those are the main things I have.
Routing it back to some of the discussion that staff is asking for options, and as I'm hearing it, you're looking at members talking about better bike pedestrian linkages, using potentially existing projects to help get that done, better coordination with Unitrans. But I'd also like to kind of come back to the micro-mobility component, which I have not heard, and it certainly seems that with nothing happening in the Covell area, that might be a option for that entire section that's been eliminated.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit, Madam Chair, if you'd like. I've been involved in conversations recently. So the City of Davis and UC Davis had an RFP out to solicit a new bike share and scooter share provider. That RFP just closed on Friday, I believe, and they did have a number of bidders. And so I talked with Lucas Griffiths at Campus Planning, who is the lead on that project, about, you know, us being involved in the planning and rollout of that service, so that as much as possible it can help connect people and address some of those first mile and last mile gaps, particularly in South Davis and the areas where we know that there's now gaps. As well, we talked about the fact that, you know, we have so many people who are coming in on the 42 or the Causeway connection that want to bring their bikes, and the bike racks on our buses are often full in the mornings coming in, and then they're full in the evenings going out. And so that for people to be able to have their bike on the other end, whether it's in Woodland or Sacramento, and then know that they have a bike share option when they get to the Davis side, could be really helpful for those folks who, you know, find themselves unable to get their bike on the bus because there's no room on the bike rack.
Well, thank you. And hearing that, do we have additional comments from CAC members on those kinds of connection possibilities? Not seeing any. I'll go back to Eric. Have you gotten what you need from the CAC in terms of comments?
I just wanted to check the temperature on one more, which was the restoration of discontinued 44 service. I know that we have had people comment about the complete removal of service from South Davis, and for some people that has meant the 42, but for others that has included the Route 44, which for people's knowledge was a express route that connected South Davis to downtown Sacramento.
I see a hand up with Olin. So, Olin, you've got the floor.
Sure.
Eric, followed by Molly. Molly, you're up next.
Eric, the 44 was, when I wasn't riding my bike to Sacramento, the 44 was my main bus when I could get off work in time to catch it. But if I couldn't get off work, there were about three other options at that time. Now, this goes back 10 years or so. What are the other options for express service for folks in South Davis besides the 44 at this point?
There is none.
None at all?
Yes.
Wow. That's, prior to tonight, when we discussed the 42 service, the comment was, well, there's still going to be express service with the 44. But is that because I can't believe there's no ridership. That bus was always practically full, going and coming.
So, Olin, I can jump in here. The 44 was discontinued along with all of the express, well, I should say suspended along with all the express services at the beginning of COVID, but before Eric and I were on board. And then as part of YOLOGO, the decision was made to bring back some but not all of the express services. And it was the three top performing express service routes that were brought back. It's the 43, the 45, I want to say, in Woodlands, the Woodlands to Downtown Sacramento Express, and then the, I always get the number
wrong,
the 230 in West Davis. So, yeah, so the remainder of the express services, including the South Davis Express, were permanently discontinued at that time. And so I think what we're suggesting here is maybe the elimination of the South Davis Express and the rerouting of the 42 kind of taken together, that amplifies, you know, that magnifies the impact of people in South Davis. And one option could be bringing back the 44.
I sure agree with that. It makes sense. I recommend that strongly. Unless things have changed dramatically in the last, 10 years or whatever it's been, I think it'd be very popular. I'd at least give it a try, maybe give it a test, and give it time so that people are aware that they've got it again. And then if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I suspect strongly that it would.
Molly, followed by Andy.
Yeah, I can't speak on behalf of I'm not a resident of South Davis, but I would think that I think a more comprehensive kind of review of express bus service elsewhere in other regions and whether that service has bounced back and a feeder service to Sacramento might be necessary rather than seeking sort of restarting the exact same 44 may not be as strategic as sort of evaluating the unmet needs of the region and thinking about how to connect those folks to it, right? And similarly for the 45, which, you know, I my husband did take sometimes, I think, going to Sacramento, but mostly took the 42 because it was just so scary to be out on your own at the bus stop, and then if you missed it, you had no other options because it wasn't also a 42 stop with a different stop, right? So I think, I don't know, I just think that as riders, I feel like express buses never worked well for me because I didn't find that the stops were, that the times were great and that it felt scary to be, you know, in the one case in the South Davis stop that was over by West Village where I worked, it felt like it was an unsafe place to walk for too. So I think it should be reevaluated, if there really is a discussion on this and not just sort of let's continue the exact same 44, which has been gone now for so many years that I think it would take some time to regenerate the ridership again.
Molly, I would tell you that staff would absolutely do a full planning review of this before we would implement it. It's the same process that we're going through in Woodland with the Woodland local service. You know, we have discussions and so much has changed with COVID. So to assume that everything that went back to normal, I think would be inappropriate. So, we would do the planning. I just wanted to bring the information to this group and see what their opinion of that service and the thought of it is. But well taken with the information, we would push hard to do, you know, a comprehensive review of exactly the needs of that community and try to connect with them a lot like we're doing with the current Woodland service changes.
Thank you. We still have comments from members. Andy?
Thank you. So one thing I'd like to point out regarding the 44, so I think it was last month at the bike at the DTSSD meeting here in Davis, we were speaking about there's a project to improve the bike lanes and whatnot on Cowell. And in the discussion of that project, it seemed like some of the staff were under the impression the 44 still ran on Cowell. It was being mentioned as like one of the buses that ran there. So they didn't seem to realize that the fact hadn't been operating for some time. So it could be something where maybe making sure that folks from the city are aware that that's not operating right now could spur some of that, could for more discussion and potential discussion for funding and whatnot to improve the transit situation in South Davis. And then also, speaking to Molly's more general comments on the state of express service, we come out of the pandemic, we still have a lot of folks working remotely and whatnot. How are the, so I know the other the express services that are operating, like the 43, which I've taken sometimes, and then the other couple of routes that did come back, how have those been doing?
They haven't had the same rebound on ridership that we've seen across other routes. And the real, I think the biggest issue is the variance that you're talking about, because people aren't going to work 5 days a week. So we have kind of this combination of not everybody going back to work in downtown Sacramento, matched with people who are going back aren't going back, you know, 5 days a week. And so we may see a good amount of passengers on a Wednesday, but on Tuesday and Friday, maybe less passengers on a per hour basis. So there's a lot of analysis and a lot of connecting with people to find out if it's the service we're providing that's not meeting their needs, or if there just isn't the need because, you know, so few people are going that direction these days. I don't think it's so few people going just from the traffic counts I've seen on 80. But it may just be the weird schedules that people are working now don't match up with what used to be Monday through Friday, you know, 8 to 5. So there's a lot of planning that needs to be done to put a good service out there.
Thank you. Olin, did you have another comment?
Yeah, just a comment to Eric and then to Molly. Eric, it'll be interesting to see what happens after the end of February, when the governor's proclamation is pulled back, to see if we get more folks working downtown in person. So that's something to keep your eye on, I would suggest. And then, Molly, I appreciate your comments. And the big thing that has happened is Zoom. And if it continues in some form, or, you know, remote work continues to some extent, maybe not the full extent that it has been, but if people don't return to work in person, then there may not need be a express services in any extensive way. And then just one last, I have a question for you. Where you mentioned West Village. Where is West Village?
It's in West Davis.
Right. Okay. In which part of West Davis?
Off of Lake.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the 44 went all the way over there?
No, the 230 did.
Okay.
And there is only 3 trips on that bus service. So I know exactly what Molly's talking about. I had that same anxiety. I used to ride from Arthur, which is the last stop before it gets on the freeway.
And it's a little shaky over there in terms of security?
It's not the security issue. It's that the only bus that does that, provides that service, is 3 trips in the morning and 3 trips coming back in the afternoon. And there's not much of an option if you miss the last trip.
I got it. Okay. All right. Thank you.
I just want to jump in that I thought Molly's point was a really good one, that, you know, particularly on the Sacramento side, you know, to have the express stops be different than the 42 stops is a little bit, would be a little bit scary. And that's a really good point. That's probably something that we should be looking at. So if you miss, especially because we have such reduced express service right now, you know, due to our driver shortage, we don't have very many trips on any of those routes these days. So if you miss one, you know, you really miss it. So.
Okay. And Eric, when you talk about the West Village, you're talking about Sutter Hospital and that complex?
Molly can probably speak better to me than I can, but West Village, there's a shopping center at the corner of Lake and Arlington.
Yeah. On the south side, Olin, not the north side.
Right. No, I've got it now. You're talking about Molly, I think, was talking about the Lake.
West Lake Village. Village, I believe. South Village. West okay. Village is a neighborhood on the UC Davis campus.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that would not have been served by the 44, right?
No, it's by the 230.
230. Okay, right. Thank you.
Okay. Staff, did you get what you were looking for from us?
That was it. A great discussion. I appreciate it, Chair Baker and CAC members.
Thank you very much. I think that takes us on to item number 9 now, which is for our information. And I'm going to pass it back to Steph.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Brian Abadat and I are going to tag team on this. This is meant to provide an update and to answer any questions that you may have about what's happening with the Yellow 80 Managed Lanes project. There's been a lot of movement in the last couple months since the last meeting, and we wanted to make sure we took the opportunity to bring you up to speed and answer any questions that you have. So I'll start us off, and then I'll hand it off to Brian. So this is just kind of an outline. We've got a lot of slides, but we're going to try to move through fairly quickly. I know it's getting to the late side of those little ones on last that probably need to go to bed soon. So next slide. So just a reminder that we are talking about cat just failed to jump on my lap. 17-mile toll managed lane on 80 between Kidwell Road on the Solano County side and West El Camino in Sacramento on 80 and I-5 interchange on US 50. That is the overall project scope. We are currently focused on a phase one, which is a smaller scope between Richards Boulevard in Davis and the 8050 interchange in West Sacramento as a first phase for this project. The goals using congestion, improving transit, and active transportation access along the corridor. Next slide. A brief history is just to remind everyone, in the summer of 2021, YTTD was awarded an $86 million infra award for a somewhat broad scope for the project. To narrow that scope, we established an ad hoc committee in November of 2021 to kind of coordinate and negotiate and advocate with Caltrans about what exactly the project was we were going to build. The board adopted project goals in December 2021, held a managed lanes workshop where we heard from kind of UC Davis experts and other projects from around California to talk about various options. And then over the course of the next 10 months, kind of engaged in close negotiations with Caltrans until October 2022, where we reached an agreement with them to have an express lane or high occupancy toll lane be the preferred alternative for the project. We also worked to procure a tolling expert that we could use to help us inform our planning for tolling on this corridor. And then in November 2022 to really this January, once we had our tolling expert on board, we did some internal work planning to kind of figure out, okay, now that we have an agreement with Caltrans about moving forward with an express lane, what do we actually need to do to make that happen? Next slide. So just a quick snapshot, the total project cost is about $208 million plus potential mitigation costs. Of that, we have about $94 million committed. We now have two requests, one that's gone in for SD1, the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program, TSIP, for $103 million. And then we have a $13 million ask that's going into the State Cog Transformative Program next week. And the timeline is the goal is to have an environmental review cleared by the end of this year. We're expecting a draft EIR in April, Caltrans being the lead on that. And then right away and design completed in 2025 with construction ending in summer 2025 and the project done in fall of 2027. Next slide. So what we're going to be talking about now in the phase we're in is what we're calling tolling advanced planning, which is really a kind of a set of deliverables that are foundational for doing tolling. These are both required for us to apply for tolling authority from the California Transportation Commission and to effectively design and manage tolling on this corridor. It's about a 12 to 18 month process with about a $2 million price tag. As the first express Express Lane's toll facility in the Sacramento region, YTTD gets the privilege of having to kind of go through the process of creating that for the entire region because we're going first. So a lot of this work is not just for our corridor. It's really about how do we advance the goal of having roadway pricing in the SACOG region. But because we're going first, we get the responsibility of trying to make that happen. And so that's part of the reason we are asking for $2 million from SACOG in order to advance this, because we know it's actually a priority for the entire SACOG region. We're just the ones who are in the best position to move that forward. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian to go through some of the details around what it exactly this looks like over the next 12 to 18 months.
Great. Thanks, Autumn. Appreciate it. Next slide, Heather, if you're ready to do so. So when you add tolling to a freeway, it really increases the complexity of the project. And Heather, if you want to move to the next slide, what we're going to do is kind of walk through what adding price managed lanes does to a project. So there are two flowcharts here. The first one kind of shows you what a typical capital project would look like, including one with just high occupancy vehicle lanes. You'd have sort of pre-project planning. You would start to select a project from your planning documents. You go through a pretty standard PMED phase, you would design it, and you would construct it. But price managed lanes does make things much more complicated. First, you have to continuously do stakeholder engagement. You have to assess, sort of the operational feasibility. There's concepts of operations, which are documents which sort of lay out in understandable terms what you're planning to do and how you're and how you're planning on doing it. You also have to look at what the traffic volumes and the revenue generation will look like, so that you can determine whether or not you can your system will cover its own costs. If you successfully navigated that process, you have to procure your tolling system and your tolling operators. And then you also have to get approval from the California Transportation Commission for the authority to, implement your tolling project. And so we're sort of in this first, half or the left half of the process right now, and needing to cover a lot of ground over the next, 12 to 18 months. The second half of the flowchart to the right is really about installing and operating the tolling, the managed lanes, once the project is constructed. And there's still a lot that needs to occur there. But that's not where we are right now. As we, approach that part of the process, we can describe those in a little more detail, but, we won't go into deep, explanation on that today. So next slide, Heather. One thing that we do want to go through is sort of the policy issues that are really important for your price managed lanes project, because it really determines what your revenue generation can be and how you're trying, what you're trying to achieve with it. So what you're looking at, the key, decision variables are, what hours and what weekday, what days of the week are you going to impose, pricing on the new managed lanes? What are your occupancy counts going to be? If you're going to have an occupancy threshold beyond which you would allow higher occupancy vehicles to travel through the lane free, what is that number? Or are you can you even do that at all? There's also, equity and other, financial factors that need to be considered in the planning phase, such as should certain users and demographics be allowed discounts or exemptions, so that they can have, access to the facilities. Also, do we continue to allow clean air vehicles access to, you know, to the managed lane, you know, without having to pay, or, you know, commercial trucks. You know, should the smaller commercial trucks be allowed to access the managed lanes as well? And then finally, you know, the next item related to access, you have to think about, you know, design a little bit, and will it be a buffer, managed lane, or will it have, you know, a physical barrier between the general purpose lanes and the managed lanes? And if so, hey, what are your access points? And then they're starting to think about, okay, zones of access which people can actually, you know, enter into the price, the express lane, and when they can get out of it as well. And then, you know, what are those, you know, what are those costs going to be as you enter into the toll zone? Then, of course, you know, what are the pains? Your policies are going to determine, you know, what, you know, what your, you know, range of fee will be to travel through the managed lane. So, you know, some projects impose, you know, a set of cap. And if they, you know, they made a policy decision, they won't charge more than a certain amount. So those are all topics of consideration that we still need to navigate in order to, you know, determine the overall feasibility and what the, you know, what types of outcomes we can expect from this project. So next slide. And of course, in order to, we don't have the answers to these questions yet, and they're complicated. They require a lot of analysis. They require a lot of coordination. They require a lot of, you know, community input. And they require, you know, a lot of, you know, person time in order to, you know, reach the end of this tolling advanced planning process. So that's why you see, you know, what seems like a pretty high figure for non-construction related work. And as Otto mentioned, the State Hub Regional Planning Round is open right now. We're partnering with Caltrans, who's submitting an $11 million capital grant application. So we're co-applying with them during the funding cycle so that we can include the tolling advanced planning work into the project. The one distinction here is that Caltrans wouldn't be leading this tolling advanced planning effort. We would still be an implementing, independent implementing agency for the SAP work. Excuse me, apologize for my voice. Next slide, Heather, please. So I'll turn it back over to Adam to talk about, you know, sort of our internal processes to the ad hoc committee and the board.
Thanks, Brian. So we had previously had what was called our Yolo-Eddy Management Committee that was working as kind of guiding the work to get the project, you know, this kind of project description and negotiating what is the project with Caltrans. We've now retired that committee. Several of the board members who served on that are no longer on the YCC board. And we are have created a new tolling advanced planning committee. It is very much going to be focused on the establishment of a governing body for tolling, as well as then some of these kind of concept of operations, traffic and revenue review, tolling authority application, some of those different pieces that Brian mentioned. So at the January board meeting, the board did appoint this committee. It's comprised of a representative from the City of West Sacramento, which is Dr. Dante Early, a representative from the Yolo County / City of Davis, which is Lucas Frerich, the county supervisor who's taken over Don Saylor's seat, and then an ad hoc committee, ex officio UC Davis member, which is Matt Goldfish from UC Davis, who also served on the prior committee. So those will be the three YCD board members that will be kind of steering this work going forward. In addition, we've begun submitting written monthly reports to the board as part of the board packet on this project, so that there's, even when it's not agendized for board discussion, there's an update that the board and committee members and members of the public can see that to, you know, to kind of keep people apprised of what's happening as we go through this process. Next slide. So lastly, yeah, the action that the board took in January was they approved a resolution for staff to submit this $2 million state co-grant application, you know, which is going in next week. Our part of it is $2 million. Caltrans is also, you know, as Brian mentioned, applying for $11 million. And they retired the older committee and established this new committee. And I think that's all the slides we have, and if I have not put all the babies to sleep with that, then we'd be happy to answer any questions that you guys have.
That's what I get for muting myself. Okay, thank you for the presentation. I think I saw Olin, Andy, and then Steve Streeter, so can we take it in that order?
Very quick question. Autumn, when we last spoke about the draft EIR, you said it would be March, April, and now it looks like it's April. And what's the most obvious way to the public that it will be noticed?
Yeah, great question. We're anticipating seeing an administrative draft hopefully soon. And then we have committed to working with Caltrans to ensure a bit more visibility and outreach. So YCTD will be, even though we're not the lead on the CEQA process, we're going to be advertising the availability of the EIR. We're going to be partnering with our local jurisdictions to you know, host workshops. So we're kind of still working through the exact details of that outreach strategy with Caltrans, but we definitely want to make sure that we have, you know, robust participation, you know, from communities here in Yolo County, even as Caltrans does their kind of official noticing of the EIR.
Great. Can I ask, did I be put on that list as the chair of the Willow Bank CSA?
Great.
To receive that notice? We've got some committee members who are very interested in sound walls, as you know, and they want to be able to make their concerns and interest in that known.
Great.
To my friends. Thank you.
Thanks for the reminder on that.
Andy.
Thank you. My question is also just about that environmental review. So thanks for asking that, Olin. Thanks for staff providing that to info. Definitely, I'm keeping an eye out for. I'm excited to see that environmental report as well. Just one other quick question that I have. I'm just looking at this cool picture of the flooded bypass there. Assuming you have the railroad tracks in the middle of there, so I'm curious: is Capital Corridor involved with this project at all?
That's a great question. I mean, to my knowledge, they have not been actively engaged, certainly not with any of the conversations we are having. But I'm sure that they'll be receiving a copy of the EIR and being asked to act to comment as any other agency would be. But it's been pretty limited to my knowledge.
Thank you.
Steve.
Unmute. My question is pretty basic. When I was starting to read the report, I ran across an acronym I wasn't familiar with. I thought, oh, infra, that must be like infrastructure, but could somebody explain what infra actually means?
Yeah, oh boy, I'm not sure I'll get the acronym right. And Brian's unmuting, maybe he remembers, but it's a federal program for infrastructure. But Brian, you got the acronym?
No, I am going to look it up because I can't.
It's just for us novices. If we run across that, we don't know what it means. The first.
It stands for investing. Give me a second.
These acronyms that only folks in Washington, D.C. can come up with. But it's essentially a competitive discretionary grant program for transportation infrastructure projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Infrastructure for Rebuilding America is what I found on the web.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments from SDAC members? I have one.
I have one more comment. I'm sorry.
Okay, Molly, and followed by Patrick.
Okay, so my question is, I guess, you know, so you had said that, right, and that there would be, you know, some careful analyses done. I imagine in this case in the process, so I'm just curious, I guess, like you could do 400 different scenarios, right? Like there are so many scenarios to build. Like how are you informing that process of building the scenarios that you then evaluate, you know, and then what are we trying to max min for, right? Like min max or, you know, I feel like I think we need to, I guess, maybe this conversation has already been had, but I feel like that I'm not clear on that necessarily.
No, it's a good question. And, you know, Caltrans have goals they're trying to achieve, and we have goals that we're trying to achieve. Back in December of not this past year, but the year before, our board established, you know, goals, which was included in the staff report, of what our priorities are. So we're looking at the different scenarios and alternatives through that lens. And so we've been having conversations with Caltrans, you know, over the past 8 months about, hey, you know, some of these scenarios are really important to us. You know, we really think that you need to be looking at, you know, scenario A, B, and C as well. And then we have to get in it's kind of the policy, you know, realm in terms of, you know, what assumptions are we going to make regarding operational policies that feed into, the analysis of those alternatives. And so, there isn't a min-max that we're trying to achieve right now. We do know that there are some, you know, mitigations that need to occur related to greenhouse gas emissions, and those are informing our analysis as well. So there's lots of factors involved. Maybe Autumn wants to expand on that a little bit.
I think you said it well, Brian. I mean, I would say that two things. I mean, in terms of scenarios, one scenario that we have continued to push for and has continued to be very much a live scenario is that we're not just building an additional lane, that we're actually converting an existing lane to a price lane. So that's something that we continue to push, and that's a priority for us. Not been a priority for Caltrans, but it is still, you know, out there, and it's part of the commitments that we have from Caltrans is to evaluate that. And I think the reason that that's important to the board is because both from a traffic operations perspective and from a VMT perspective, when you have multiple price lanes and you're converting a general purpose lane to a price lane, it's actually going to operate better for traffic because, again, you've got now two lanes where you have the ability to price it to regulate demand. You're creating more revenue, which means you have more revenue to invest in transit and transportation equity projects. And it really helps address the VMT impacts because you're not just adding capacity, you're actually managing capacity more effectively. And again, able to attain a higher level of transit use of the corridor. So for all those reasons, I think that's a scenario that's really important to us. I think where we have differed most from Caltrans with regard to our goals is kind of optimizing around, transit and what kind of multimodal use of the corridor, equity, and kind of doing as much as we, you know, we've been kind of pushing as much as possible to mitigate as much VMT as possible. And I think that's a bit of where we see the, the tension that we continue to navigate with Caltrans.
Yeah, thank you. That's helpful.
Patrick, then Olin, then Andy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Brian, for the presentation. I wanted to just, take a moment to appreciate that, you all being the trailblazers on this kind of process, because I think, so much of the air quality that our region faces and the issues and stuff, I think, really literally start right here, and then we all share that air quality. So I think finding new solutions is something that's pretty long overdue. And I think that, the work that you go into to create a kind of blueprint here is going to be really important. And thank you for, also to push back.
You're muted.
That's right. There was actually pushback, but not just doing another lane, but finding creative solutions, even though it's taking, pretty hard work to do that. That hasn't necessarily been done before. I think that one of the questions I had, and I'm sorry if I missed it, was some of these considerations that you're talking about, who will use it and how will they use it and things like that. Did you say you had a timeline for making some of those decisions?
I'm just doing it at the same time. Yeah, that process all, needs to occur in the next 12 months, and that's what the funding that we're, we'll be able to advance some of this work without the funding, just because it needs to occur. But it all does need to occur, like, within the next 12 to 18 months, because, Caltrans needs to be able to lock in some design assumptions. And then there's also a time pressure to begin obligating some of that infra grant funding by fall of 24. So it's a tight window. And we're gonna be very busy trying to navigate through this process and trying to set that that precedent for the region.
So Olin and then Andy.
Sure. Well, Autumn and Brian, and maybe I have had this conversation with this group, or maybe it's been with Caltrans when they appeared before the Willowbank CSA about exactly a year ago this month, which is that a good deal of this traffic, the increased traffic, is Bay Area stuff. And I understand that this project is on SACOG and MTC's list as kind of a super regional project. And I'm wondering how much MTC is contributing to the effort, both in terms of the analysis and whatnot, as well as the funding.
So MTC is not contributing funding, but they are definitely a supporter and an advocate for the project. I think, one of the things we'll be looking at is kind of piggybacking on kind of what they've done, both in, Solano County, right, is as part of the Bay Area, is currently building express lanes that are going to go all the way to Vacaville, to 505. And so we'll be looking at, there will be a gap between Vacaville and the county line. And so I think looking at how do we close that gap is going to be an important kind of question, as well how do we want our policies to sort of be consistent with what the Bay Area is doing versus needing to be different based on the differences that we see here in the region. So for example, like the Bay Area doesn't do any tolling on the weekends, but we know that for our section of 80, some of the worst traffic is on the weekends, right? And so I think trying to figure out how do we both, again, kind of piggyback and create an opportunity for there to be a consistent experience for people who are coming from the Bay Area and passing through our region, but at the same time recognizing that the challenges are different here. I think, and so MTC has been a great partner in that. They've also been helping us in terms of sharing information about what they're doing as kind of an experienced toll operator to help us, understand what we need to do. But I would say, so we have their moral support. We don't have any financial support.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate because they really, I think, should be prepared because it benefits their residents as much or perhaps more than ours. I'm a little surprised, but I know how it goes. Now, there's precedent for in this region for one county to give its funds to build a project in Sacramento County, and that's El Dorado County. Their residents, many of whom worked in the Sacramento area, were stuck in congestion as soon as they hit the Sacramento County line because there were no carpool lanes there. So El Dorado County agreed to pay for carpool lanes down to a certain point, and I'm not remembering where exactly, but it was significantly extended into Sacramento County. And this goes back maybe 15 years. But so when there's a reason to do that, I think agencies should consider it. And I don't know where you make that argument, but with them, or how you do it, but it's fair, I believe. And then the other thing, and you and Brian are probably aware of this, but Caltrans, I can understand why, and I didn't realize until tonight that Yolo County was pushing a scenario whereby no lanes were added. If that's the case, I can understand Caltrans' concerns about that. They got just devastated when they opened the first HOB lane in California down in the Santa Monica Freeway in the late 70s. They did not add a lane. They took a lane away and turned it into an HOB lane. And that just, it was, you know, you could almost still hear the screams from people in the Caltrans District 7 office over that one. So that's the background.
I just want to clarify, Olin, that we are not proposing not building a lane and only converting a lane. We're proposing adding a new lane and converting a general purpose lane.
Okay, so you'd have two
managed lanes. Correct. Yes.
And I think you were saying you could handle them differently. One might be a pay toll lane, and the other one might be for carpools, that sort of thing.
Potentially. I think what we're proposing is actually that what we've talked about is that both would be express lanes, and that's based on, again, the goals of, you know, minimizing new VMT and maximizing revenue that's available for transit. And as well, from Caltrans' perspective, you have better traffic operations when you have multiple express lanes rather than just one express lane. So it's kind of, it achieves some of our goals and it achieves some of Caltrans' goals.
Okay. Well, I think it should be analyzed, but I just wanted to make you aware of that history.
That is really interesting to know. Yeah.
I worked for Caltrans at that time, and it was just ugly. It was just, people were furious in Southern California about that. And it didn't help. In the long run, it was a detour that didn't need to happen. At any rate.
Thank you, Olin. Andy, you got your next.
Thank you. So a couple of questions focusing on the transit-specific aspects of this. Just in terms of the alternatives being looked at, is there anything, we've talked about the managed lanes themselves and the potential of having two managed lanes in each direction, but in terms of, like, spots for the 42 and other transit lines get on and off the highway, is there a possibility of having, like, dedicated transit connections to the managed lanes, as opposed to, like, the 42 having to sit in traffic at Mace? Is that being looked at all? And then... Second, looking at the Caltrans aspect of this, as you know, and I also work at the Caltrans and headquarters, and we're a ways away from the district folks that you all are dealing with, but we are working to beef up our coordination with the district and elevate transit more at that level. And there are a number of new transit-focused planning positions there funded by IIJA. So I'd be curious to hear just if you could shed some more light on. It sounds like you're receiving some pushback from the District 3 folks on kind of the transit-focused aspect of this project, and it could be that, I mean, some of that ties into the history that Olin was speaking to, but any light you could shed on that, definitely be interested to hear.
Yeah, in terms of your first question, the project does include transit signal priority for the ramps that are metered. So, for example, at Dave's Boulevard, right, there is a ramp meter there. This would add transit signal priority both to the ramp meter itself so that the ramp meter would recognize when there is a transit vehicle in the queue and then basically give a kind of green, flush all of the traffic on so that the bus is not sitting in the queue, as well as then doing traffic signal priority at the traffic light adjacent to the on-ramps along the corridor. So those are things we pushed for that Caltrans is now including in the project description. So those will definitely help speed up the buses getting on the freeway, particularly at Mace, where we know there's a lot of congestion. In terms of the Caltrans headquarters, has actually been extremely helpful in this project, in this process. Very early on, when we were kind of not making as much progress as Caltrans District 3 as we would like, we did bring in the headquarters folks, particularly from the Division of Planning and Sustainability, to help us. And they've been extremely helpful in terms of helping move the needle with Caltrans District Green. I think it's safe to say that we wouldn't have gotten where we are had it not been for the involvement of staff from headquarters.
Thanks for the insights there.
Any other comments from members? I have one of my own, but I'm saving it for last. So I want to make sure everybody gets heard. Seeing none, I guess I'll bring up mine. As you know, we've got our advisory committee framework, and one of our very large bubbles is equity and social justice. And I noticed people are talking about framing it in equity. But it always gets lost in the let's talk about transit, let's talk about planning, let's talk about second lanes, let's talk about sound walls. So I just want to make sure that on the 80 planning committee that we've got folks that will actually be able to speak to this. And I'm really talking about the cognitive bias that sneaks in and hijacks your equity conversation. And making sure that you've got some way in which we're going to be able to adjust for that so we're not going to end up in the land of unintended consequences. And in particular, that's your people of color, people from marginalized neighborhoods, people who are disabled, making sure that we're actually designing from the ground up for all of us. I often find that designing for the least of us allows us to design best for all of us. And really taking a moment to kind of be able to center your work around access and use. I realize clean air is the big one and we all benefit from clean air, but I hate for our social justice and equity work to get lost in the discussion over other items.
Appreciate that the comment and the reflection, and I want to offer kind of 3 points about how we're working on that. The first is as part of our agreement with Caltrans that we the MOU that we signed with Caltrans around this project last fall in October, it does include expressly that toll revenues would be used for transit and for transportation equity projects in disadvantaged communities adjacent to the corridor, and that's primarily West Sacramento that we're talking about. The second thing is that of this $2 million that we're going after for State COG for this tolling advanced planning process, it includes an equity framework, which would be kind of a way in which we're sort of integrating equity into all of the various steps, all the different components that we talked about, as well as that designing that to that tolling equity program specifically. So both kind of an overarching equity framework and then what does a specific equity program look like for this toll facility, both in terms of how, you know, whether it's loan from discounts, discounted tolls, and also the uses of toll revenue to invest in transportation equity projects. So that's the second point. And the third and final point is that, you know, I mentioned that there's 3 board members who are going to be serving on the ad hoc committee. One of them is Dr. Dante Early, who is city council mm-hmm. member from West Sacramento, who's made it clear that that's going to be a key priority for her with this project. And so we're really thrilled to have her serving on the committee.
I think Dante is a good addition. I would simply suggest that when you're going through your sort of information and bringing folks up to speed, that one of the things that you could bring people up to speed on is cognitive bias and how it actually, no matter how well-intentioned you are, if you aren't actually intentional and don't know what your biases are, that you will keep doing the same thing again. So I know I'm doing a lot of work with that with other boards and commissions and at the national level, but it is a really good opportunity to think about transit by taking those biases into consideration early and being able to kind of work to minimize those. Another comment. So I see Patrick followed by Steve.
Yeah, I was just curious if there was somewhere I could find some information or specifics on the programs in West Sacramento that the funds will go to benefit.
Yeah, that's not yet developed. So that's just, we just have what's the, you know, the one line in the agreement with Caltrans about how those revenues are spent. So that's part of the scope of work. Like, what we can share with you is the scope of work for the equity framework and the development of the equity programs. So you'll see, like, what's the process by which we're planning to develop those. So that's something we can definitely share with you and with the whole committee if the committee's interested.
I think that would be great. Thank you for that. Stephen, you're up. Stephen, you're
I don't know about the City of West Sacramento, but the City of Davis does have an Americans with Disabilities Act Advisory Committee that I'm on, and Gloria Partita and others. So we haven't met for a while, but if that would be helpful to address what you're talking about, we could certainly arrange for that to happen. Kelly Stack, which would be the coordinator.
Thank you.
Any last comments from members on this? This is a great presentation, by the way. I want to thank staff on that, and hopefully we will continue to get regularly updated and have the opportunity to weigh in, and look forward to seeing more about this. Going, gone for any last comments?
Okay. I just want to request if you could stay on, Autumn, after we close, just for 30 seconds, I would appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're just speaking to Autumn, not to the whole committee and staff?
Correct. It's a, I'm having a little computer problem, and I want to ask Autumn if she has someone on the staff who might take a few minutes tomorrow to...
No worry. I just want to make sure who's staying on and who's going.
It's a Zoom problem, and this is the only committee. Well, no, there's another one, but at any rate, I need a little assistance.
It's all good.
Good.
Stephen, you have a comment?
Yeah, just one. I will try to pay more attention to the chat and when you left briefly. And if I miss it, I think you have my phone where you could text me, and that could be a backup. But I'll keep the chat up in the future, so if you need to.
You were a great chair for those few minutes.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, I was a silent chair.
That's usually the sign of a great chair. If there's nothing more on this item, we're going to move on into adjournment. I'd like to take a minute to thank the committee for electing me to be chair. It is always a very humbling experience to be trusted to help manage the conversation, and I really appreciate that and hope that I do you all justice. Thanks to staff, great meeting, really good information. I really enjoyed it. And if there are other comments, this is the time to make them. Otherwise, we're going to stand adjourned. Any other comments?
Welcome to Heather.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, except for Olin and Autumn, the rest of us are adjourned. Have a great night, everybody.
Right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Autumn.
Yes.
This will just be very short, but I wanted to ask you, I have I've done some changes with my laptop and my monitor, and I have a webcam that works a lot better for me, but I can't get it hooked up. And I have an idea of what might be the problem, but I just need someone on the staff maybe who's good on this kind of stuff to maybe send me a Zoom invitation in the morning. And then let me see if I've corrected the problem.
Okay, I can ask our IT director. We have a two-person IT team. I can reach out to them in the morning and see if one of them is available to do that with you. I think Chad Nakula, I think he loves to be helpful.
Okay.
And so if you can just, what you could do is, if you can send me an email, I can then, to remind me, I will reach out to him in the morning and ask him to get in touch with you.
Great. Is email or text better for you?
Email is better.
Okay. Do you mind if I have your cell?
No, not at all. Okay. It's area code 510-851-1464.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Chad McCullough, and I'll send you an email right now.
Okay, perfect. In the morning I've got to pick up my son and take him to school and a few other things, but as soon as I get in the office, I'll ask Chad about it.
That's great. And I'll give you my phone number.
Okay.
You don't already have. I'll give you my phone number and you can just pass that on to him and
okay.
At convenience, he can call me.
Okay. Sounds good, Olin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck with it.
Good meeting.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.